case of the day, Wisconsin Central versus Shannon. You may proceed, Ms.
May it please the court, Rachel Hoover, Assistant Illinois Attorney General, appearing on behalf of defendants' appellants Shannon and McDonald. The district court's judgment here should be reversed because federal law does not preempt the Department of Labor's investigation of Wisconsin Central for potential violation of the wage law. First, the Railway Labor Act preempts disputes about the meaning of a collective bargaining agreement that affect liability under state law. But at this point, there is no dispute here, and there may never be one. And second, Congress did not intend to preempt the field of railroad wages, which is an area that is traditionally regulated by the states. I'll start first with the Railway Labor Act, which was the basis for the district court's judgment. Our argument is very simple. Under the Supreme Court and this court's precedent, the Railway Labor Act preempts disputes about the meaning of a collective bargaining agreement term that would determine liability under state law. But at this point, there is no such dispute, and there may never be one over the whole course of the department's investigation. Preemption here is simply premature. At this point, what's happened is the department has commenced an investigation and has requested records, but it hasn't received anything. It has not received anything from Wisconsin Central. So it's impossible for there to be a dispute about the meaning of a collective bargaining agreement when the department hasn't even reviewed or received any collective bargaining agreement, let alone determined whether any of the terms are relevant to Wisconsin Central's potential liability under the wage law. Wisconsin Central makes its collective bargaining agreements sound extremely complicated, like no one could possibly understand them. But it has not pinpointed any term that it interprets one way and an employee interprets another way, and that the difference between their interpretations would be dispositive of its liability for overtime pay under the wage law. It simply has not pinpointed any dispute. And the Railway Labor Act only governs disputes. Section 151A of the Act specifically uses that word, disputes. And there just isn't one here. The mere fact that Wisconsin Central has collective bargaining agreements that might need to be looked at is insufficient for preemption here, because there are a number of scenarios under which any review, even if review is necessary, that review would not be relevant or dispositive to the wage law analysis. For example, it's unclear at this point that the compliance officer would even need to look at the collective bargaining agreement. Although Wisconsin Central says it's 99.9% likely, at this point, we don't even have the agreement. We don't know. They don't have records. They don't have pay stubs or timesheets. The department can't make any determination as to whether the collective bargaining agreement even needs to be looked at. And if it does, it's entirely possible that the relevant terms will be clear. The department's job is to review agreements, to review records, and determine whether the facts show that an employer violated the wage law. This is its job, and it's unclear at this point that the department will have any difficulty in interpreting the collective bargaining agreements. Also, if there is a disagreement, if there is a term that's relevant but that the department doesn't understand, it's possible that the parties here, which is Wisconsin Central and the employees, that they might agree on the relevant terms. And then you're looking at a situation like Levadas, the U.S. Supreme Court case, Bentz, this court's case. In those situations, when the parties agree on the relevant term, there's no preemption. And even if the parties disagree, it's possible that that disagreement would not be relevant. Wisconsin Central would have its interpretation, the employee would have its interpretation, and the department might say, well, you know what, under both of those, Wisconsin Central, you're liable. So we don't need an arbitrator to come in and tell us which interpretation is correct, because it's irrelevant to our determination, which is simply whether you violated the wage law. All of these scenarios are possible. At this point, we cannot say, Wisconsin Central cannot say, what will happen during the course of the department's investigation. So it was premature for the district court to stop the department before it could even be determined whether the collective bargaining agreement would need to be interpreted.
There would be a lot of preliminary investigation, discovery, and other things in anticipation of before, and at least in your view, this would get to that point.
Yes.
And you don't look at this as something that says you can look at it down the road a little bit and realize this is where it's going to end up and then come up with this decision to avoid all of this preliminary stuff that would take a lot of time and effort.
That's right. You cannot look ahead and say that necessarily there will be an interpretive dispute. And that's what the district court did here. The district court looked at these agreements and said, these are really complicated. There's a lot of terms here. I'm sure that there's going to be some interpretation required. But as I just recited, there are a lot of possibilities. And this court has been very clear that unless there is a concrete dispute about the interpretation of a term, there is no need to go to arbitration. And even if, to just take it the next step, if in the future a dispute does arise and the parties don't agree and it's not clear, then the proper procedure is not to tell the department, okay, stop, you can't do anything more. It's not that you throw out the claim. If you look at the Tice case and the Miller case, which was just cited to the court by Wisconsin Central's counsel last week, both of those cases say what you do is you stay the proceedings. The parties go to arbitration, and this would be just between the employer and the employee, brought under the Railway Labor Act. The arbitrator would decide what the term means. Then the parties come back, and the department would accept that interpretation and would then apply the wage law given that interpretation. And if, in that situation, it's now clear that, well, okay, Wisconsin Central is not liable because of the way this term has been interpreted, then the department closes its investigation. That's closed. But if it is still possible, even taking that term as interpreted by the arbitrator, if it's still possible that Wisconsin Central could be liable, then there is no reason that the department's investigation cannot continue. Congress did not intend to preempt application of state law, especially labor laws. It just intended that the interpretation be left to arbitrators. And the department understands that if a dispute arises that is a genuine good faith dispute, then the department will say, okay, parties, you go figure this out, because we need to understand what this means in order for us to continue our investigation. But Congress did not intend to stop an investigation. Under Wisconsin Central's logic, the EEOC wouldn't be able to investigate transportation companies for potential violation of the ADA or ADEA if they might, down the line, have to look at a collective bargaining agreement. But that's not the law. That's not what the Supreme Court has said. That's not what this court has said. Unless the court has other questions about the Railway Labor Act, I'll briefly touch on the field preemption argument. That argument also fails. The district court disposed of it, didn't reach it, but pretty much disposed of it in a footnote. And the acts that Wisconsin Central cites, the federal acts that deal with the railroads, have nothing to do with wages. They have to show a clear and manifest intent to preempt this field, the field of railroad wages, because wages and labor are an area traditionally regulated by the states. But Wisconsin Central hasn't done that by citing acts that regulate a lot of different areas but don't overlap with wages. The U.S. Supreme Court already looked at the Railway Labor Act. In the Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis, the Supreme Court said, this is not a preemption of the field of working conditions. And furthermore, the other acts that Wisconsin Central cites relate to safety, unemployment, unique interstate commerce threats, nothing to do with wages. I see I'm getting into my rebuttal time, so I will see you later.
Thank you, Ms. Silver. Mr. Whitehead.
May it please the court and counsel. We now know that the primary argument being made by the Department of Labor officials is that the district judge presumably committed an abuse of discretion in deciding this question of whether or not the Railway Labor Act preempts the overtime premium requirements of the Illinois minimum wage law because it was premature. Your Honors, you can review the pleadings that were filed in the district court. This argument was not made to Judge Castillo. At no time in the cross motions for summary judgment did the Department of Labor ever suggest to Judge Castillo that the case was not ripe, that it was premature, or that we were lacking an actual controversy required under the Declaratory Judgment Act to render the decision. This argument has been made solely for the first time by appellate counsel. The argument is wrong, as the appellate counsel acknowledges on page 2 of her brief. For in the statement of jurisdiction in the government's brief in this case, the department acknowledges that this case is ripe. Indeed, the brief recites the fact that there have been claims filed by Wisconsin Central employees with the Department of Labor, and that the Department of Labor, quote, has sought to enforce the wage law by initiating an investigation into overtime pay and issuing a subpoena for all of Wisconsin Central's wage records. We have an actual case or controversy here, Your Honors, as to whether or not any claim for overtime pay under the Illinois minimum wage law with respect to Wisconsin Central's unionized employees will be preempted under the Railway Labor Act. Judge Castillo concluded that the answer to that question was yes, and I submit that that decision was clearly correct. But he didn't make this decision in the abstract. He had before him the four collective bargaining agreements that we've submitted in our supplemental appendix that govern the terms and conditions of employment of Wisconsin Central's organized employees. These collective bargaining agreements were before the district court. And the Department of Labor, in its response to the cross motions for summary judgment, although the collective bargaining agreements were before the court, did not come forward to Judge Castillo and offer a single suggestion as to how he could possibly, or how the department could possibly have enforced the overtime premium provisions of Illinois law without interpreting those collective bargaining agreements. And that, of course, is the standard that the Supreme Court has established for preemption under either the Railway Labor Act in the Hawaiian Airlines case or under the comparable provisions in Section 301 of the Labor Management Relations Act in the Lingle case that came from this court. Judge Castillo's decision was clearly correct. As your honors are aware, in order for there to be a determination, an adjudication of whether there has been an overtime pay violation under Illinois law, there are two elements that must be evaluated. First, it's necessary to determine what the regular rate of pay of the employee is. And second, it's necessary to determine what the hours worked of that employee have been during the work week in question. This court is not writing on a clean slate in this regard. As we have indicated, every case that the parties have been able to find in which there has been a claim for an overtime premium under a state minimum wage law involving organized employees, either organized employees under the Railway Labor Act or under the LMRA, has found that that claim is preempted because of the inherent necessity of interpreting the collective bargaining agreement to determine the regular rate of pay and the hours worked. We've cited to this court... Yes, sir.
Could there be a situation where it's totally a ministerial matter? By that I mean a simple accounting as opposed to the need to interpret the various components which often creep in the railway and with railway workers? Well, I mean, I'm not saying that's likely. I'm just trying to see whether there's any room for the argument the state advances that there is some perhaps narrow area where it could be addressed without going to interpretive.
I think not under these collective bargaining agreements, Your Honor. Under these collective bargaining agreements, the determination of what an employee's regular rate of pay is an interpretive requirement that brings into play a whole host of provisions in the agreement. But even if the agreements appeared to be clear on their face, and I defy the department to demonstrate that level of clarity with respect to these collective bargaining agreements, as Your Honors are aware, the interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement involves not simply the review of the literal language of the agreement, but also consideration of the common law of the shop, the past practices of the parties, the implicit terms of the agreement that Congress has decreed are the exclusive province of a Railway Labor Act arbitrator. Now, in this instance, Your Honor, we would submit that Judge Castillo, who had these agreements in front of him, was able to properly determine that any overtime premium claim brought by the department on behalf of a Wisconsin Central employee would be preempted by the Railway Labor Act. In this regard, he was consistent with the decisions from the First Circuit, the Third Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, district courts within this circuit, and uniquely of interest, decisions of the Illinois Appellate Court that have ruled that the Illinois Minimum Wage Act's overtime premium claims, the very claims that the department is enforcing against Wisconsin Central, are preempted where the wages of the employees are governed by and the working conditions are governed by a collective bargaining agreement.
I thought they were just investigating.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the department would suggest that investigation is somehow different than enforcement. But in this instance, I would submit that the fact that the department has subpoenaed record from Wisconsin Central and is subjecting Wisconsin Central to the costs, inconvenience, and disruptions associated with producing all of those records in an instance where, as a matter of law, any claim that the department would bring is preempted by the Railway Labor Act, as Judge Castillo, we believe, correctly found, creates a case or controversy. We ought not to be put through the expense, inconvenience, and disruption of the investigation that the state is processing, is proffering, on the offhand possibility that at the end of the day the state would say, never mind, there's no violation. Because if the state...
there is an argument and go mediate it.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Or there is a controversy, go mediate the controversy before we do anything.
Well, Your Honor, there is the suggestion the state has made that basically the doctrine of preemption is really akin to primary jurisdiction or exhaustion of remedies, I think is inconsistent in the context of a preemption case, as opposed to the cases the state relies upon, which are not preemption. They are preclusion cases involving co-equal federal statutes. But none of the decisions that have applied RLA preemption to independent state law claims have suggested that what should really happen is that the state law claim should be stayed pending the outcome of some form of arbitration. None of the cases, Lingle, Hawaiian Airlines, none of this court's decisions involving preemption, such as the Baker case that Your Honor wrote, or the National Metal Workers case, Judge Bauer case, on whose panel you sat, none of those cases have suggested that the way these matters should be handled is that the state law claim should be stayed pending arbitration. And there's an easy answer for the reason for that, and that is because you can't simply send the matter off to arbitration as you might be able to refer it to a state Supreme Court for an interpretation of an Illinois law. The collective bargaining agreements establish a major process for handling of grievances on the property once they've been filed by employees before the matter gets to arbitration. So it's not possible in this case. The department would never be a party to the arbitration proceeding, as they acknowledge. So the proper result is not some kind of a stay or an application of a primary jurisdiction doctrine. The proper result in a case in which a federal law such as this preempts the state law, it's a bar. It's an absolute bar. Now, that is a harsh result. I acknowledge that. That's counterintuitive. But what the reason for this result is based upon the importance and the primacy of the federal policies underlying both the RLA and the LMRA, that the interpretation of collective bargaining agreements is exclusively the province of experienced arbitrators, both to ensure a consistent interpretation that would ensure that there be no disruption to labor relations, but also because of the expertise that the arbitrators bring to these matters.
Would it be fair to say then that the only companies that the Department of Labor in Illinois can investigate are those without CBAs?
Well, it would be fair to say, Your Honor, that a collective bargaining agreement governed by federal law will preclude the department's enforcement of the overtime premium provisions of the Illinois Minimum Wage Act. Yes, I believe that is the consequence, and that is in truth what the First Circuit, the Third Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit held in the cases that we have cited to this court. This court also has issued a number of decisions, for example, barring claims under the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act. That was the Baker case and the Atchley case and the National Metal Crafters case. Those are situations in which, even though the other employees, unorganized, non-union employees, persons not covered by collective bargaining agreements, might be able to profess a claim, process a claim under these state law provisions, that this court held that the claims brought on behalf of organized employees covered by collective bargaining agreements are barred. And the reason for that is because of the exclusive jurisdiction that Congress decreed be placed in a Railway Labor Act arbitrator where the state law claim requires the interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement. Now, in this instance, Judge Castillo reviewed these collective bargaining agreements against the backdrop of the interpretations of the regulations of the Illinois Department of Labor that defined what regular rate of pay was and what hours worked were. And it becomes very apparent, and we've perhaps bored this court in pages of our brief explaining the myriad of interpretive issues that are buried under that concept of regular rate of pay and hours worked. And the state has not responded by saying, oh, no, we wouldn't have to determine how to treat meal periods, travel time, premium pay, fringe benefit payments. We wouldn't have to interpret what the employee's regular rate of pay is, even though there are a whole variety of regular rates of pay depending upon what the employee is doing at the particular time. All of these subjects are going to be ones that of necessity would have to be interpreted, as the district court concluded. And we think that Judge Castillo's analysis, which was consistent with all of the authority, the state has not cited a single case in which either a federal or state court has ruled that you could adjudicate an overtime premium claim without interpreting the underlying collective bargaining agreement.
Now, is this confined to just the railroad, I guess, organizations? Does this apply to any other line of work, I guess?
Well, it would, Judge, because of the preemption doctrine under Section 301 of the Labor Management Relations Act is akin to the preemption doctrine under the RLA, employees who are organized and are covered by collective bargaining agreements governed by the LMRA would similarly be covered. Now, are there employees who are organized but not covered by either the RLA or the LMRA? Yes. For example, state and local governmental employees are not covered by either the Railway Labor Act or the Labor Management Relations Act. And so, fortunately, we don't have to deal in this case with the question of whether there is some counterpart state preemption doctrine that might come into play. But I believe that this court's decisions in the Illinois wage payment cases, set the stage for this relatively broad conclusion, and that is that where the adjudication of a state overtime premium claim is dependent upon the interpretation of a collective bargaining agreement, as is clearly the case here, it is barred. And there was nothing premature about Judge Castillo's ruling in that regard, because at the end of the day, any claim that the department would enforce against Wisconsin Central arising out of these collective bargaining agreements would inherently require their interpretation. I think the language from the majority opinion in this court's en banc decision involving In re Bentz says it all, and that is where there is a dispute over the amount that is owed or how that amount should be calculated, that requires of necessity the interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement and therefore is preempted. A brief word on the field preemption argument that we have made. We are not suggesting that any of the federal statutes that we have cited by themselves give rise to express preemption of the claim. That's not the argument we're making. Judge Castillo believed that we were relying primarily on the Railway Labor Act, and he quite properly cited the Supreme Court's decision that said that the Railway Labor Act does not preempt the determination of terms and conditions of employment. In truth, the decision that we would rely upon is the Sixth Circuit's decision in the R.J. Corman case. To our knowledge, it's still good law. There's no contrary authority out there. But what the R.J. Corman court did was, in our judgment, a very appropriate analysis of the totality of federal laws that have regulated the hours of work of railroad employees, and in some instances, monies to be paid to them in addition to their hours of work. That would include the Adamson Act and the Hours of Service Act. I think the most relevant decision would be the Supreme Court's decision way back in the 20s, I believe it was, in the Erie Railroad case. There, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal hours of service law barred a claim under the New York counterpart law. The New York counterpart law said you could only work your employees 8 hours, but if you worked them more than that, you had to pay them an additional 1/8 of their basic day of pay. And the Supreme Court said, no, Congress has determined the appropriate amount of work to be done and the appropriate costs that the railroad is to bear in connection with this. We would submit that the field preemption argument is an important one. We believe it is meritorious. We acknowledge that Judge Castillo didn't reach it. We think it's an alternative ground for affirming the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. Ms. Hoover.
Two points I'd like to make on rebuttal. First, about where we are, and about where we might go. Counsel has posited a potential scenario that might occur in the future, which is that the department may have to interpret the collective bargaining agreements. We would even agree that it is likely that the department will have to look at these collective bargaining agreements. But what is not known right now is whether there will be any dispute about what that agreement means. And the Railway Labor Act only preempts disputes. Counsel did not raise the possibility that Wisconsin Central and the employees might agree on what these agreements mean. And in that case, we would be in the Bentz situation or in the Livadas situation. That is just as likely as that the parties would disagree.
Ms. Hoover, the Sixth Circuit suggests, our sister circuit, that going down the route you suggest might interfere with the uniformity essential to the efficient interstate rail operations. Now, that's the field issue. Do you acknowledge that obviously Congress has made a pretty strong commitment to through its legislation to this field being preempted in some ways?
In some ways, yes.
So is the state's position that it is somehow, because this is an Illinois-based company, I understand its trackage goes forth five states, is it that you have a special obligation to keep a light focused on wage issues that would normally have to be resolved through collective bargaining?
No, I don't think the department is specifically looking at Wisconsin Central because it has an office in Illinois or, you know, it is more based in Illinois than the surrounding states. The reason that the department is even became aware that it should look into it was because of the allegations made by the five signal maintainers. They brought this to the department's attention, and the department looks at all employers who have employees within the state. Council tries to make the railroad sound special and unique. They have special interstate concerns, but the department looks at all kinds of businesses that have operations across all of the states, not just six states. And those employers have to comply with the different states' wage laws. And Congress has not said, we want it to be different for the railroad. What they have said is, we want to regulate safety, as counsel pointed out. They have regulated the hours of work, which is consistent with safety. They've directly regulated safety in the Safety Act. But in that act, there's an express preemption provision that covers only safety laws. So Congress's express statement that this act should preempt safety laws one can then say, okay, Congress didn't intend to preempt other kinds of laws. And wages, as this court and the U.S. Supreme Court have said, wages and these kinds of labor laws are traditionally regulated by the states. So there is an increased requirement on Wisconsin Central. It is its burden to show a clear and manifest intent on the part of Congress to regulate this area, which they have not done. And just briefly, back to the Railway Labor Act, as far as whether an arbitration could be brought and then you could go back to the department, I point the court to footnote 18 in the Levadas case, in which the Supreme Court has suggested that colliarizing the situation, that is, staying and sending the question to arbitration, might be appropriate. And I believe this court took up that suggestion in the Tice and the Miller cases, so that in this circuit, that is the proper procedure. Thank you. We ask the court to reverse.
Thank you, Ms. Hoover. Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. Case is taken under advisement.